Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Brian McGill said, "One of the most sincere forms of respect is actually listening to what another has to say." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who listens to his people. Today's playmaker did his postdoctoral work at the United States Military Academy. With us today is a CEO who is the youngest member elected to the Texas Association of Basketball Officials Hall of Fame. This great playmaker is Dallas Cothram. Dallas is CEO of Masterplan and La Barba Permit Service. Now, Masterplan is a zoning and land use consulting firm, and La Barba Permit Service is an alcohol licensing service. Established in 1981, Masterplan provides political consultation and representation for all types of public strategies. Masterplan provides professional consultation to businesses, individuals, utilities, and government agencies in all matters relating to land use, including zoning, subdivisions, building permits, and other development approvals. The firm's practice is divided into three sections: zoning and land use, building code and permitting, and entitlement and lobbying. The largest portion of work remains zoning and board of adjustment work. Now, La Barba Permit Service recently celebrated its 50th year in business and is the industry leader in obtaining alcohol permits from the TABC. Well, Dallas, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, as a professor with a doctorate, was getting into the family business a foregone conclusion?
Well, no, not really. I had anticipated going to graduate school, completing my studies, and had hoped to be a college president. I don't know why anybody goes to college and thinks that's what they want to do, but it seemed like a good job to me. And so in some senses, I guess I always thought I wanted to be an executive, but I had taught for a number of years in East Texas and from time to time would do some of the family business when they had cases in East Texas. And I think I did a good job doing it. I enjoyed it. I'd been around it for a long time and knew, you know, how to deal with people and how to make effective presentations. But the current president of our company showed up one day for my office hours, and I was stunned to see him. It, total non sequitur. He wasn't supposed to be there. And he just said, "It's time for you to come home. The DISD is going to have a huge bond package. You've made tenure here. You've proven to everybody whatever it is you needed to prove. Now it's time to come home. We need you to come home." So had it been a family member that said that, that wouldn't have been as impactful. That it was a non-family member that said, "We need you." And UT Tyler was good enough to give me a year leave of absence to determine, did I want to really pursue this or did I want to come back? And so not many people, would check out of a tenured job, but I thought it was an interesting challenge and wanted to do it, and I've been extremely happy that I made the decision.
Well, a couple of things about your background I find interesting. United States Military Academy. Why?
I went to undergraduate at Austin College, and a guy ahead of me who had played football there, and I played basketball. We were friends. He had gone to done a PhD ahead of me at TCU and then did a postdoc at West Point. And I think most people probably think after a doctorate, enough school. But he had convinced me this is a fabulous program, and I loved it. Now, my wife, who's an economic historian, called it history camp. And in a way it was, but the teachers were Westmoreland, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice came to almost said campus, but it's a post. And I can remember the first day that I was there, the effective dean of the college came and said at the beginning and introduced himself and said, "I want to help everybody to get comfortable. I want you to understand that the chief goal of our history department with our students is making them leaders that are effective in combat." And I thought, wow, this is not a university campus, but it is. And the cadets are fabulous. The teaching there is really good. It's all about leadership. Every class there is about leadership and how to make yourself an effective leader and how to help everybody else be an effective leader. And so It was a really rewarding experience, and I have just the utmost respect for our armed services, period, and our leaders that are in that.
My guess is being a leader in the military and being a leader in business go hand in hand.
I think they do. You know, I knew when I had gotten there, the number one school for undergraduate degrees that produces college presidents is West Point. Schools respect that people come out of there and they're ready and they're expected to lead, and they're given an opportunity as a second lieutenant, a captain, and so on. That's what they do, and they produce leaders. And I really enjoyed being around and getting to teach some of those cadets while I was there and learn from them and learn from their faculty. But that is a place that's all about leadership.
Then you probably that helped develop your ability to lead your people. Is that correct?
It did. And I was always interested in that. I played sports in high school, was a captain of teams, and in college I'd been a 2-year captain of my basketball team. Certainly not for being even one of the better players. But you can be a good leader and not necessarily be the best person. And I think, I enjoy that. I like the responsibility, and I enjoy sort of evaluating myself and knowing when I'm being effective and when I'm not. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons I loved officiating is you have to have control of the game. You got to seem to be and be a good leader out there, and you're the only one that knows how effective you are. You'll get a lot of help, though, from the audience and from the coaches.
Absolutely. Let's go back to your business. Your dad started the business Master Plan in 1981.
Yes.
Why?
Well, Dallas, he had been on city councils that where there was a lot of change going on in the city. They had built DFW, they had built the lakes, the Reunion Arena, and Dallas was changing. And this is sort of going on again where you're getting a lot of non-Texans moving here. So it was a period of rapid change, and development was being done by not just locals who needed help, and government was becoming more complicated. And that's really what's happening today.
He saw a need. He filled it. What year did you come into the business?
I've been here since 2003.
So the business was well established by the time you got here.
It was. We were, we're now in 3 cities. We had traditionally just been here. And so we're in Houston, Dallas, and Austin, and work really statewide. And our workforce now is, 4 times as many people, and we've grown 5 times probably in business volume.
Well, I mentioned your background in the opening of the show, but how do you explain your niche business? Because this is a niche business. It's different. How do you explain your business to people you talk to?
Well, my wife once jokingly, when asked by some other folks, what does your husband do? She said, he fights City Hall. And it's a funny line, and in some truth, that's a little bit true. But we really try to make it collaborative. We're in the public policy business, and we're in the influencing business. But we really try to find projects that work and that everybody benefits from it. The city, county, et cetera, benefit from tax base and jobs. The developer certainly does by, increased ad valorem or rents or whatever they're collecting. And the community does. So I think that's really what we do is, but we work really at the tip of the spear. And that's not always a really comfortable place to be because people don't like change. They like to go to the mountains and the ocean and the beach because they don't change over ages. People are resistant to change. I mean, in our business, we talk about, cave people, citizens against virtually everything. It's not that they're against things. It's just they want to play it safe. And so we hear all the time, oh, that's a great project, but it needs to be somewhere else. There's a mythical land of somewhere else that has nothing but dense multifamily projects and lots of retail that people don't want. And so that's what we do and who we are. And so we have a very unique, talented workforce of people that can operate on the front lines where it's challenging.
Well, I got to Dallas a few years before your dad started this company. And I feel like I've grown up here because the amount of changes that have happened the last 40 years in Dallas, and you've grew up in Dallas, I would think that of all the major cities in the United States, this has got to be the best one for the growth, economic growth in the United States. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I made this statement to members of my Vistage group a couple of years ago that if I could choose any market to be in, I'd actually choose this market. And it doesn't hurt any that my grandfather was a developer. We tell people regularly that the Cawthorns have been in real estate since the 1930s. He built the first shopping mall in Dallas, far enough back that Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys played there. So, you know, this is what we do. Really passionate about it. And this is a very vibrant area that's undergoing significant change right now. You know, a lot of times people aren't aware of that they're going through change. In the 1930s, people didn't wake up and say, I'm in the progressive era. Oh, joy. They just knew that it was the 1930s. I think that at least at our place, we are very aware of there's a technological revolution going on, and there's also a geographical revolution going on right here in North Texas. You know, 100 years ago, this wasn't great geography. It was hot, bugs, etc. But now we're in the center of the United States. You've got the inland port. You have a large airport. You've got generally good schools. This is a great place to be and a great place to do business. And we know how to help people do business and operate and make change occur. And so, no, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
I would think there is a lot of pleasure you take in your family being a part of the growth in Dallas.
Absolutely.
Before, when your dad was part of the city council, but even before he started the business.
Absolutely. I loved it. The kids can, we can drive up and down the tollway and up and down 75, and my kids can point to you and say, you know, that's a master plan project. Carl did that project. Santos did that project that they really know. I mean, and some of it is because they get the same beating that I did. They have to go and take pictures with me. They have to go put up the zoning signs. I've done every job in our family business, from the lowest ones to now seemingly the top position. But yeah, we do. We take a lot of pride in the fact that we make change happen. And, you know, my kids would tell you they're most impressed about like the Hunt Building where the lights come on and to celebrate a Mavericks or Stars win. That's, to them, that's really cool, and it is really cool. To me, I maybe am a little more impressed that we played a tiny role in that project.
Well, let's talk about some of your favorite projects that you've had your hands in, your fingers in with Master Plan.
I think probably the one that most people recognize, that almost everybody in the region's been to, is we worked on Victory and the American Airlines Center. And there has not been, and that's from before the election, you know, through all the zoning and all the construction up to this point, there's never been a point from really the 90s to the present time that our firm's not working on something there. And so Victory is very much alive. And you'll find people maybe that don't live in Dallas that live either far north or south or west that think it hasn't done well. Well, the retail didn't. Now it looks like that it will because there's finally enough density to make it work. But it's really well planned. The bones are there. It is an entertainment district. We're proud that we worked on it. And so that's one I think people like. We got an opportunity to work for President Bush when he moved here to gate his street. That's a one-in-a-lifetime project. I mean, certainly it was fun to be on the phone where they actually say, please hold for the President of the United States. And he and his wife were just such gracious clients that listened to advice and were primarily concerned about they wanted to be a good neighbor. So, those are two that I know everybody knows, but there are hundreds of others. We've done over 100 DISD campuses. We work for 8 or 9 different public school districts. We've done DARTS work for many years. Encore is more than a 30-year partner. Union Pacific Railroad. So we have a lot of large clients that we get to touch that like working for a small business. And, And the ones I've worked on personally, sure, I'm proud of those. I love going to visit Rosewood Court are places that are so nice that, you know, I took a little bit of a hand in helping shape that area.
Well, it's interesting. Since I've been here, the infrastructure of Dallas has changed. I remember Central Expressway with two lanes on both sides. I remember many of the major arteries in Dallas not being three or four lanes wide, just two lanes wide. That has changed. DART has come into play. There was no DART here. But where is Dallas going from here, from your perspective, being hands-on with what's been going on in Dallas?
I think that we struggle. I think there's several things going on. One, this area really struggles from tribalism, that all of the cities compete against each other to attract the next big thing. Now, I think it's helpful that there was some partnership on trying to do the new Amazon second headquarters. That's been rarely happened. You saw that happen in the 1960s and 70s on DFW, but typically there's a lot of talk about regionalism. What I see and our employees see out there is tribalism, that Plano wants to win a deal over Frisco or over Garland or whoever it is for competing. And that's fine, and it's certainly good for the end users, but I think that that's certainly a challenge. We also face a real struggle here. We're not particularly good at being urban. And you're having people who understand they need it. We need it from a tax-based perspective. We need it so that people don't have to drive an hour or more to get to work. But when given an opportunity to have a dense project, it always should be somewhere else. And then I think the third thing, probably the trend that we see the most that people don't think about a lot, is there's a lot of generational change taking place in the Metroplex, that you have a good number of people actually retiring to North Texas from California or from other places that are more expensive to live, and maybe they're here because their grandkids are here often, because of good jobs and good schools. So you have an influx of more older baby boomers or even older, and then this community or people that have been here a long time growing older. So you have a large number of baby boomers. And then my generation X, smallest generation, and then you have a lot of millennials moving here. So it's the millennials that are driving the market. Our clients are building projects to respond to millennials, but we have to go to boards and commissions and get approvals from mostly people that are either themselves baby boomers or influenced, because at least in the city of Dallas, it's really strange when the average citizen in Dallas is 41, but the average voter is 66. And voters, you know, older voters vote so much more than millennials, and Dallas is the lowest ranking city in millennial voters. So that's we just see this at neighborhood meetings that, you know, we've done the demographic analysis and the neighborhood might be, you would expect that you're going to get a mid to late 40s audience, and you show up and at nearly 50, I'm the youngest one there. We shouldn't be building cities for me. I'm nearly 50 years old. We should be really thinking about good planning is thinking way ahead, even maybe further ahead than the millennials, that we ought to be trying to think of Dallas 2050. And, you know, I see traffic and think, wow, that's wonderful. Look at all these well-educated people here that are making a good living. A lot of people don't see that. And it's hard. You know, we invite people to meetings, and we have a joke here that, you know, that we invite property owners to meetings, and unfortunately people show up. And they're very suspicious of change, particularly of change of maybe not a local developer.
You didn't use this word, I don't think, in the last few minutes. But let me ask this question, with all that you're doing, are you political?
I follow it. I'm interested in it. Obviously, as a trained historian, I've studied it. But no, I mean, I don't tell people who I vote for. I don't give to any candidates. We're for the winners, because that's who we have to work with. And I would say, you know, we work on the municipal level, sometimes the county level. Most of the people, almost all of the people are civil servants. They're donating their time in most instances. And even if they're paid, it's more of a stipend than anything else. And so even when I don't appreciate or don't like the vote, almost every time I think people are doing it for what they think are the right reasons. So I don't follow local elections. I mean, I follow them, but I don't try to influence them because that's not really our business. And one thing we don't do here is we don't run campaigns. We think that's a clear conflict of interest. And we want to be able to work effectively with whoever the voters choose is right. And you see communities, particularly suburban communities, that change. They're pro-growth, then they get a little too much of it, and the voters out with those people and in with a new crowd. We've got to be able to work with both of those groups effectively.
Well, let's change the subject a little bit. Talk about you as CEO of your company, and we haven't mentioned LaBarber Permit Service, but you said you've done almost every job there has been here at Master Plan. What's the most important thing that you do as a CEO?
I think that, you know, you have to rely on the goodwill of your employees and their abilities. And as you grow, you can't do all of it, nor should you. And I really think there are three things that I'm really mindful of on a daily basis that people need. One, they want to be properly compensated in both dollars and in appreciation. And so I really try to tell people, I appreciate your efforts. You're doing a good job. Secondly, I think you have to give people independent autonomy to create their own outcome. I mean, the most common conversation I have in the office is listening to somebody who they already know the right answer. They just want to talk to me about it. They want me to agree that it's the right answer. They want me really to give them a permission slip to go ahead and do what they already know the right decision is. So, and then the third thing is people need non-repetitive tasks. They need to challenge their brain. And here, they certainly get to. No zoning case is ever the same. The players are different. The project is different. The jurisdiction is different. And so I have people that I trust. Now, I will say, I think the most important thing I do is hiring. You have to hire the right teammates. And you have to hire people that are good in the areas maybe you're not in. And then you have to let them go out and do the work and not be afraid to let them do the work.
You've been talking about leadership, essentially, without using that word. At the very beginning of the show, I talked about the fact that you did your postdoctoral work at the United States Military Academy. You've been involved with coaching.
Yes.
With officiating, have those entities, being the military academy, you talked a little bit about that, and officiating and coaching sports, has that helped your leadership skills here at Master Plan?
Absolutely. I mean, coaching 5-year-old boys, if you can teach something to them and get them to do it, that's sort of a reproducible business model of a sort. I will say that the officiating is one of the very best things I ever did. So my first job actually was officiating. I started refereeing for the YMCA at 14 years old. And I can remember getting home back to the Y after officiating and being told by the director then, what happened at your game? I was like, oh, you know, some adult was yelling at me and I gave him 2 15-yard penalties. He said, do you know who that was? I was like, no, some dad. It was Tom Hicks, but I didn't know who he was. I just treated him like any of the coaches. I can say some of the most difficult games I ever refereed, and I did college basketball games, were Park City's YMCA elementary school boy contests. If you generally in officiating, when you do a great job, they're yelling at you from both sides of the gym. It put me in a great position. When I go to a neighborhood meeting, I have been in much more hostile situations. And you have to learn to take care of yourself and not let people get the best of you. Because a lot of times, people that show up at a zoning meeting are showing up emotionally. And that's not who they really are. It's the same thing in a basketball game. They are screaming at you about a travel. They're making something personal that's not. And so I think that was really helpful. The first business I really ran was I ran the referee chapter in Tyler for 6 or 7 years when I was there. And I took a group that had debt and made them we were in some ways the economically the best chapter in the state when I left, and that was a good opportunity to run a business before I had to come and run this business. The principles aren't that different, and that was a 300-person business, including blue-collar folks who relied on that money to help pay their mortgage or send their kids to school. So in some ways, the stakes were higher there.
And that learning came over to what you're doing now. This has been fascinating, but tell everybody how they can find out more about your two businesses. We haven't talked much about LaBarbera Permit Service, but tell them where we can find out more about both sides.
So masterplantexas.com for Master Plan is our website, and then LaBarbera Permit Service.com for it. We merged with them, really it's an acquisition, but culturally it was more of a merger. Our families have been friends for 50 years. It's an over 50-year-old business that helps people with the Byzantine process of alcohol permitting in Texas, which has its roots in the 1920s and 30s, and the rules haven't changed. And it's not worth people's time to do it. We can have it finished before you're figuring out what the rules are.
I would think just understanding the red tape, as your company does,
absolutely
is well worth whatever you're charging your clients.
That's really what we do. And the longer I've done this, I try to explain to people, is it something you could do? Maybe you could do it, but you don't know the people. By the time you get started, we're well into it. And what we try to do is come up with the right strategy. I mean, that's really at the heart of everything, whether it's coaching or business. Coming up with the right strategy is just critically important in everything you do.
Well, Dallas, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. You are definitely a playmaker.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
And playmaker comes from sports. It's the person that makes things happen in the game. You're making things happen here in Dallas, Texas. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We've been speaking with Dallas Cothram. Dallas is CEO of Master Plan and LaBarbera Permit Service. Thank you for joining us. It's been great having Dallas on the show. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlayMakersTalkShow.com, and we'll be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.